Anyway, so this is diff number four, right? Yeah. The diff drive home number four. And so today was a little different. We went to a panel, and the title exhibition panel, they don't look like they're having fun. exhibition panel sort of on the state of what? Movie screening? Getting movies in theaters?
Yeah, it seemed like... So this panel was made up of Barack Epstein, who is the program... I don't know his official title, but I always think of him as the program director and kind of the guy who runs the Texas theater. So if you... yeah, that's how I see him anyway. So, I mean, he's behind the screenings, behind the advertisements and everything. They had the CEO of Cinepolis, a larger, mostly Mexico-based, it seems like, theater chain. There's, like I said, we talking about this before, but I think there's only one in the
Dallas-Fort
Worth area. There's only one that I'm aware of, and it's kind of in the Grapevine, Mid-Cities type, in 121 area.
To our UK listeners, you have no idea.
Right. Sorry for, pinpointing that. If you want to look it up, it's on Google Maps. You can see it. And then a gentleman named Brandon, I didn't catch his last name, but he works for an organization called Film Frog, who is a... they help get films distribution. So
like marketing, right?
They're a marketing firm. He also has and owns or runs, or his company partakes in some boutique cinemas. One of them was called Cinema Lab out of New Jersey. So that was the three panel, and a very, very solid moderator of that panel asking some really good questions. Mostly, we thought it was more going to be along the lines of how are cinemas doing in 2024.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the synopsis led us to believe as well.
Right?
Right? Right. It's not just me thinking that, right? Okay.
No, that's what I thought as well.
Yeah.
But this seemed like, and it was kind of sparsely attended, but it seemed like this was a discussion along the lines of how, if you were a budding filmmaker or a filmmaker of an independent film or a self-financed film.
Or even like a marketer.
Right. How do you get your information? How do you get your movie seen by theaters in order to get it seen by an audience, essentially? And how do you what's the best way about going about doing it? And it seemed the consensus was that you just need to hire a marketer. And hopefully you have
distribution, yeah.
Hopefully you have enough money to do that. Or, yeah, I mean...
Or get picked up by, a distributor.
Right. In an hour-long panel, there's not nearly enough time, right? And I don't necessarily know if these three gentlemen were all theater-based. I think it would have been interesting to have a streaming option there, like someone who could speak to the streaming experience. I don't think any of those people could, because they were all, again, theater-focused. And they talked a little bit about making their, how they're doing more event-based programming, although I don't believe that to be true for Cinepolis, to be fair. I don't believe that Cinepolis is... he talked about doing, wine tastings, but they were
themed kind of movie wine tasting nights. I mean, it wasn't just, like...
Right. I don't think that's their bread and butter.
No.
Right? I mean, if you go to someplace like Alamo, they have their parties, they have their repertory screenings that are all focused every single month.
Yeah.
Texas Theater has screenings that are tied into live performances sometimes, that's kind of the thing, one of the things that they focus on. I feel like Cinepolis, and we talked about this as well, but Cinepolis is a little out of place in this because they're such a huge brand.
Right, right.
And so talking to Barack, who owns, or not owns, but works and directs a two-screen theater, and then talking to someone who's a marketing director, who is trying to kind of foster those types of tie-ins to help smaller films get distribution. It seemed like there was a kind of a disconnect between what all three of them were doing.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we kind of had to extrapolate the overlaps. If
right.
That makes sense.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think the most interesting thing for me out of that conversation is that if you're an independent filmmaker, cross your fingers and hope you get picked up by A24 or Neon. I would say, and this wasn't explicitly stated, but like, I would say you're submitting to as many film festivals as you possibly can.
Yep.
And hoping to get your film in front of the right person so you can start having those, here's where this film played, right?
Yep.
And like, I can put that in the trailer. It played at Diff, it played at TIFF, it played at Oak Cliff, it played... Fantastic Fest, or you know, South by Southwest,
right.
Name them all. You're trying to get it in front of those people, and if you don't, well, good luck to you. I would say you probably are. You know, you probably need to figure out a way to have someone create a Blu-ray for you and sell it at conventions, or sell it at, I mean, like, sell it on your website, and hope
right.
you can find the ability to. Connect with directly with fans, but I mean, so someone from the Austin Film Society was there and basically asked the question, you know, if your film is not getting picked up by what is considered right now a lower or middle tier distribution house, which would be your Neons and your A24s, which to us, kind of, you know, you and I probably sound pretty big.
I know, right.
So, and I guess Brock also mentioned, like, IFC, right?
Yeah.
So IFC and Shudder, which would be, I think, a step below.
Right.
You know, A24 and Neon. If you're not getting that recognition, I'm not sure there's an outlet for you, right?
Right.
I mean, maybe you try to get, you know, you try to get on Fandor or another streaming service, but there was nobody really there to talk to that piece.
No, and
of it.
They kind of brought it up, right? Where, you know, I think Barack answered that guy's question from the Austin Film Society kind of by saying, you know, what you do is you get different sort of representation for different sort of different sort of avenues. So you find someone to try and handle the streaming. You find someone to try and handle, you know, the four-walling aspect, or getting stuff into smaller theaters, or whatever.
You know, leading into the next thing we're going to talk about, we've kind of made friends with. I met this guy a few times, and of course, you know, he's doing a ton of meeting with people, so it isn't. I mean, he wouldn't have remembered me. We weren't like close, right? But
right.
I met him a few times. This one, we're talking about an actor named Todd Jenkins, who's. Recognizable, you probably have seen it in a few things, but a few years prior to COVID, I believe, they had put out an independently produced horror film called, horror comedy called Cherokee Creek. Sasquatch comedy, bloody, gory, sexy.
The ultimate party animal.
and it's a fun, silly, you know, see it high or drunk with your friends kind of movie. That's basically what it is. And you know, they four-walled it, which basically, if four-walling means you rent out a theater, you rent out a space to show your film.
But you still charge admission for it,
but
you get in the theater, and then that could lead to something else, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So that basic, so the four-walling aspect of it is to prove to the theater owners that the film has legs, that you're willing to back it, you're willing to come out and speak to it, make a party around it. When they did the Cherokee Creek stuff, they actually hired a stand-up comedian to come out and like warm up the crowd
before the movie.
You know, they were all there. The film kind of starts off breaking the fourth wall a little bit too. So it's just a silly, fun time. I mean, but also they did a hell of a lot of self-promotion. Sold tickets through their own website, sold merch, had, you know, posters available, all that kind of stuff. So the idea of you being able to kind of distribute it that way. And they actually did a screening at the Granbury Theater. You know, they come out and they take pictures with fans, and they'll go to Texas Frightmare and walk the floor and sell their Blu-ray and sign
it.
Like out
of a backpack, right? Yeah.
Todd'll sign it right there, take a selfie with you. And so, to that extent, I mean, like, I think, one, the problem with doing that is you have a narrow, genre of films that are there that are capable of kind of generating that kind of, like, you're not going to do that with the Merchant Ivory. You're not going to do that with
But here's a question, because didn't Cassavetes do a lot of this?
Sure.
Right.
And it nearly killed him. I mean, so...
No. Yeah, no, but I mean, like, but I was just going to say, like, to your point, right?
Right,
is that even then, right, he kind of did that to gain distribution from the bigger studios.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, he was using it as a ploy to get more distribution, not... Yeah. I mean, so even a filmmaker like that, it takes so much energy and so much work, right? And like you said, these other genres will play better for that.
Right.
Yeah.
I think one of the things, what I, again, would have liked the panel to kind of delve into is that there aren't, there aren't 1,000 screens of, like, the Texas Theater, right?
Right.
There's probably, that 100 Texas Theaters throughout the United States? If there's 2 per state, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, I'd be right? really shocked.
Right? I mean, you probably have them in your major metropolitan areas. Cities over 300,000 or metropolitan areas at around 1 million. But, I mean, like, even then...
Yeah, but not all the same. I mean, so you'll have several in New York, right?
Sure.
Several in Los Angeles, but you'll have 1 in Dallas.
1 in Dallas,
A couple in Chicago.
Yes. The Cherokee Creek guys did four-wall the Angelica. That's where I first saw it.
Okay.
And they had a couple of nights they were showing. And they rented out Theater 5, which is the biggest theater at the Angelica, as far as I know, anyway. I don't necessarily know exactly how well they did, but it was relatively well attended as far as I could, when I was there. But, yeah, I mean, like, it's, I don't know what you do if you're not associated or don't have the money to kind of personally back your film, right?
Yeah.
Does it become something you've just done and hope against hope that you can get it into one of the streaming
services?
You
pat yourself on the back for doing it? I mean,
there's no good, like, these days. Like, before, when you were in the VHS era, you could go around to conventions and just shop this thing out of the back of your car.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you could go to mom-and-pop video stores and sell a shot-on-video movie and give them 20 copies or whatever, right? I mean,
right.
like, and then have them use those to rent them out. So you're selling them for, probably $50 to $100 a pop?
Yeah.
And you can... you can make as many VHS copies as you need to,
right.
as long as you can print out the box art and, pop the tab on the VHS tape. Nowadays, like, I don't...
Put the title in Sharpie.
right. Print out a label and...
Do not record over!
Be kind, rewind, and then... But yeah, I don't know, like, these days, like, I know it's not cost prohibitive to make yourself your own Blu-ray or put that out, but is it... But do you have the ability to, like, do all of that, right? Even though I don't necessarily know if it's, like, ridiculously difficult, you still have to have someone master the Blu-ray, put together the menus, put together the chapter stops. All of this stuff takes
it's
a different skill set than what...
And this is just after you spend... I mean, what, did you just, like, self-finance the movie as well? I mean, so there's all of that, too. I mean, forget about the time and energy of making the movie, but where did the production money come from? And so then you have to go and, like, basically distribute it yourself as well.
Yeah. So good luck, young filmmakers out there.
Well, back to Todd, he said something as, we were talking, he's like, the hardest thing in this business is to get someone to press play.
Right.
And I thought that really kind of linked in to the idea in that panel, right? And what you were just talking about is, how do you get people to watch this? How do you get people to pay attention? And I mean, this idea is not unique to the film world, right? I mean, the hardest thing as a writer is to get someone to fucking read your work.
Right.
Right? It's just like just getting someone to look at it. Or as an artist, right? Getting someone to...
Or podcasters,
to,
even.
Or a podcaster. Getting someone to press play and then listen to your podcast. Like, you're very well thought out, articulate ideas.
Right.
On lots of different things,
highly
not just
intelligent
movies.
And original ideas that we're pushing out every single episode.
Every... Blood. High quality content, right? I mean, yes, I have bloody knuckles from working so hard on them.
Right.
We're putting miles and miles into this.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. And I also wonder, like, you know, weirdly enough, does like torrenting like hurt? I know it hurts probably independent film like that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, though, if you weren't going to make any money off of, would you even like just decide to torrent your own, like put together
right,
your
put
own
it,
torrent?
Yeah.
And just to give it away for free so people will eventually see it, and hopefully that leads to the next thing. Hopefully that leads to somebody, you know, picking you up as a DP somewhere, or you can kind of build your way up.
You know, this, I'm a little surprised that the giving stuff away for free didn't, this is going to sound, I don't know, kind of flippant, but maybe didn't take off more when like Radiohead did it.
Right.
Right when they gave away In Rainbows.
Or that was a pay as you pay what you want.
Well,
right?
But you could pay zero.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, so, but, and I just mean like, because I think that could have had an effect where these guys who have made a ton of money already, right, are like, okay, that's enough, like, here.
Right.
And that could then open the door to smaller artists being signed to labels and being sold, etc., right? And of course, maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part. Or,
right.
Or wishful sort of projecting on my part. But, you know, I wonder if that could have led to something.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like you said, getting a film made at all is an accomplishment, right? Short film, long form film, any of it. So, obviously, I think everyone can take pride in doing that particular piece of it, but...
But pride don't pay the bills.
But pride don't pay no bills. And so... I think, like, the hustle is... got to be exhausting, and we know local filmmakers who have been trying to get their own short films and series off the ground for quite some time, and it's just I applaud them, and I can only imagine how rough it is to one travel around to all of these festivals if you do get in.
Yeah.
And when you don't get it, I mean, like, there's a ton of different festivals, right? So there's you're probably gonna get into some of them, if not all of them, right? But yeah, I guess you gotta just keep on pushing.
But and again, I think, and this applies to all artistic endeavors, right? I mean, how many? Here, I'll use my own experience, right? I mean, how many writers self-pay for research trips, right? To go look at things that you need to go do to sort of, I want to write this piece of work that you can't just, you know, make up, because then someone will call you out on it.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, it's everybody just, keep, you know what, keep hustling. Don't pay the bills. It'll be fine. Just keep making.
Just keep making art.
Just, there you go.
Just keep on arting.
Keep.
Always be arting.
Always
A-B-A.
Be arting. That coffee's for arters.
Coffee's for filmmakers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right, let's talk about what we have to talk about.
Okay.
And all apologies to Todd.
Yeah.
Who was actually wonderful in this movie that we're
going to
talk about.
Yeah, right. He was. And a lot of that was, I believe, his own sort of additions to the script.
Okay, so we saw Harsh Treatment today, which the title makes no sense.
I know.
Which, let's just... Okay, so... This
it's
is
just called, like, bad luck?
This is a Texas film, and I think it was filmed in and around DFW area.
Okay.
Because it's got Barry Corbin. Barry Corbin's a Fort Worth guy.
He doesn't travel very far.
Well, I can't imagine he's doing a ton of traveling, right? He's an older man. I mean,
right.
He's awesome, but I mean, you know, he's an older dude.
Right.
So I would imagine his, like, flying and jet-setting days are probably behind him. Maybe not. I don't know. But I'm just guessing. So this is a
Western
comedy gore fest in a way.
Yeah.
How weird is it that we've seen two films that have been using like ropes and like logging hooks?
Yeah, as bad guys. Right. That's right.
In a violent nature
did the same thing. I know. I'm watching that going, wow, that was the same trick that we saw in that other film.
So we start the movie off. A brief synopsis. Our two heroes of the film are two hapless criminals who were part of a gang who were stealing keepsakes or they were stealing like stored treasures from this mercantile.
Right, this guy had his own sort of like safety deposit box.
In the old west, in this game.
I mean, it was like, you know, here, leave your money with me and I'll keep it locked up in a box for you.
And the guy from Breaking Bad was in it, the Hispanic DEA agent that worked with Walt's brother-in-law.
Oh.
That's where he was from.
Okay.
They stole it. And then there are all these bad guys that are after it because
Big Bad.
Right. This never made any sense to me. They discarded the Big Bads discarded the amulet, but that's what they wanted all along. Why would they have discarded the amulet?
Well, how did the amulet get into the safety deposit box in the first place?
I don't have any fucking clue. So the whole...
Because like the Big Bad had never seen it before. So like who put it in there?
So, yeah, so it turns out they were robbing... So everyone was going to... They were all coming for it, I guess. Okay, so the people who robbed it, the guy from Breaking Bad who stole it didn't know he was stealing an amulet. Okay,
right.
Fine.
He just wanted money.
So he discards he finds them some money and he discards the amulet. But also, there are these... this Confederate general who's got a gang of ruffians...
Colonel.
Confederate colonel who's got a gang of ruffians that are going to steal this amulet for some unknown nefarious reason, like because he's never seen indigenous people be scared unless they're around the amulet. And then there's this indigenous person who actually owns or
is looking for the amulet.
Looking for the amulet because it actually belongs to him.
Yeah.
And that's the story.
But and like, is this guy, is he like a crime lord? Like a local crime lord kind of thing? I mean, I don't really know. Everyone's scared of him, but...
And that's, and our friend Todd is part of the Confederacy bad guy group. And this is, the Confederacy's thrown about. It's not like, this is Civil War era. There's not a lot of like social commentary in this movie about that. But the movie, it portrays itself as a comedy but it's such broad strokes.
Yeah.
Like, it's a slapstick comedy. But, and I will say that the straight man Earl, I thought was actually pretty good. I don't think he was funny, but I thought his acting was fine.
Yeah.
Everyone else was kind of amateurish in a sense. Not Todd, of course.
Right, Todd was
good. And I will always say that, not everybody. I mean, Barry Corbin, the guy from Breaking Bad, a handful of, and like even the other Earl, they were cousins, both named Earl.
Was it Merle and Earl or Earl and Earl?
I thought it was Earl and Earl. Maybe it was Merle. I don't know. I stopped listening to a lot of it. Like, I was checking my watch multiple times during the movie, and we'd only gotten through, here's the problem with these, and I find myself like, doing this and it's bad. I've got to stop because I look at the runtime of films and I'm like, oh shit! Well, all these plot points have to wrap up. And this is not just about the movies that we've seen at the DIFF. It's about everything
in general. Right?
But at DIFF, I never know when the movies start because there's like I'm not paying attention to when the introduction ends or when they're
right.
So I was like, shit! Did we go off at 9:45? Because then I can like. Will be done by 11:15. I'm just like, I was waiting for this to be over before it hit the hour mark, and I'm like, really, the first 10 minutes, I was...
You knew what you were in for.
It was just bad. It doesn't look good either. It looks like...
It looks like it was shot, like, on video, kind of, like, not, like, grainy, but, like, the lighting is all off. It just looks at, you can tell between an amateur production and a more slick professional production. And then the worst part of the film for me was the music. Like, it was all sitcom-y, country kind of, like, it was all instrumental, of course.
Kind of like hee-haw-ish.
Right. It was all hee-haw. That's a perfect... That's the perfect description for it. Because, like, one, it was way too loud. All of the beats were then tied into, like, the music to make you feel or evoke a certain thing, you know, feeling from you. Oh, God, this was awful.
The
plot, and look, this is the whole thing. The amulets, as a red herring, and like we're just walking from to and fro. But
it's our MacGuffin, right?
Right. But we're so, it's such low budget that you are clearly walking around like from in the same 100 yards, right?
Yeah.
Saloon is, and that all of that can be forgiven to a certain extent, but there was just nothing interesting, and then. The comedy, like, it takes a lot. Look, this is like an Ernest Goes to Camp, but it's not it's not even as earnest as an Ernest film, right? This doesn't play for kids, but this is comedy that's, like, I've never seen anything like this, like, that's this silly, and then also this weirdly bloody and violent.
Yeah.
Like, this is not even, like, Driveaway Dolls. You know what I'm saying?
Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
They don't do it like that, though. Genuinely funny. But that's the thing is that there's a subtle difference between being able to, like, I always felt the characters in this movie knew they were in a comedy, right?
Yeah,
they were always trying to be funny. This was a Three Stooges
episode.
And Tucker and Dale were just like a bumbling fools that kept finding themselves in situations that were ridiculous but were plausible to the plot that we were watching, right?
Right.
When they're in the truck and they're getting pulled over by the cop and Dale is shirtless and they're like just trying to go up to the cabin to get a little man time, and like it's just that's funny, right? I mean that's just good comedy.
This is
a guy walking silly, like he's all like
and he's all gangly legged.
I think I said the music again still like really really hurts it, but like there's just like ridiculous close-ups. The way that the film is shot is all over the place. There was a Q&A that Brock and I decided to skip out on because it was late. It's almost midnight.
It's
on a school night, and we've got two more nights of this.
This is true. We have a meeting in the morning.
So it's just, it was rough, to say the least.
Yeah, and I was sad that it was rough. I think there is, like you said, you can forgive a lot of that stuff, but I think the film has to kind of have more of a direction, right? Or more of a kind of understanding of what it really is. And I didn't think that it...
Yeah, no, this is Hidden Fortress, right? This is like, I mean, like, these guys are R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah.
And they should be looking for the plans to the Death Star, and they've got all of these competing forces that should also be looking for the plans for the Death Star.
I like that you just compared this to Hidden Fortress. Jesus.
That'll be on the poster. Harsh Treatment is no Hidden Fortress. Harsh Treatment should
Why
be like
the Hidden Scream. Yeah.
Right. That was the best part of this movie were the credits. Was the like super bad esque like guys in relief, you know. It was just bad. Like I don't understand, like it just seemed like they had seen a bunch of independently shot films and said, okay, well we'll take
that and we'll do this. The over-the-top gore makes no sense in this movie whatsoever. Right. Like if you're going to be a silly comedy, just be a fucking silly comedy then.
Right.
Like, I mean, at least commit to the bit, right? Make right. everybody kind of pseudo...
Over the top?
Yeah, over the top and pseudo into the joke, right? I mean, like, make your Confederate colonel, you know, just some larger-than-life Texas swilling, you know, just like, you know, mustachioed jerk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Make your indigenous hero, you know, you know, practically a ninja, right? I mean, make them
right.
like where they're just
invincible,
this, right? Right, yeah. and then you have cool henchmen that do cool henchmen things, but I don't think you need to have gut busting
no
gore in this, and it just seemed out of place. And also, you just need to be funny. Like, there's if you're none. So either do one or the other, right?
Right.
Like, make this. A super serious,
gore
you know,
fest.
like crime drama gore fest, or make this a super silly, fun time comedy gang movie, right? I mean, like
the apple dumpling game.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Like, make this. If your sentiment is to make this a, like I said, an earnest movie, then make an earnest movie. It doesn't. You just don't have, you can't do both, and especially if you don't do any of them well.
Right. Yeah, like you said about sort of seeing a bunch of different independent films and then sort of cribbing off of that. That was kind of the vibe I got. Was it I don't know, tropey is not the right word, but kind of, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of cliches in, I'm sorry, there's a lot of independent film cliches now, right?
Right, yeah.
Where you're like, oh, the camera's... But I think there's a lot of that there, and yeah, it's just I don't know.
Yeah,
should have been better.
Well,
or
and
could
I mean,
have been better.
It's I find it odd that this was a selection for the festival, like, because usually you find like interesting misses, and I don't feel like this is one of them, right? I don't
right.
feel like this feels like someone would have watched this and said, I don't think this belongs in our festival.
Right,
here.
Right.
If this was, like I said, if this was a miss and it was just the comedy, right? Or if this was a miss and it was just the gore, I could understand it. Because if you go look at something like In a Violent Nature, which for us was a miss.
Right.
I understand. Well, then that one's slicker than this, of course.
But there was that idea there, right?
Right,
there was
right.
an interesting idea there that, yeah, maybe didn't fully work, but, right, it was a good miss? Is that, I mean...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think In a Violent Nature, there are going to be people who love that film. I think there are going to be people who just, that are okay with the meandering and are okay with the slowness and just really, like...
Once that's on Shudder.
Dive into the mythology and like really love it.
Yeah.
This is never going to go anywhere. I mean, like there's just like, even with Corbin and some bigger name actors, this is going to be one. And Todd Jenkins, I mean, I'm looking at every. And again, this is a credit to Todd, and of course we like him. So this is obviously we're biased in a sense, but I'm looking
right.
at every other role and I'm thinking you should have just put Todd in like any of these roles.
No, right. Elsewhere. No, yeah, you're not wrong. You're really not wrong.
I mean, just give Todd the bigger role here.
Because he could have easily played Earl or Merle and Earl.
Yeah.
What, I mean, right?
Right. Or the Colonel or even the bigger rolled other bad guy, right?
Who he kind of resembled anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm with you, but just I don't think the movie can make up its mind what it wanted to be or what it thought it wanted to be.
No,
right?
No, and like I said, the good news for you listeners is that you'll never hear of it again, most likely. So, and for you Barry Corbin completists out there, you may have a hard time finding this one post. Like, this doesn't go anywhere, right? I mean, like, am I wrong in here? Am I, this...
I
just can't imagine it getting distribution. I can't imagine... One, it is so... It looks too amateurish, right? If it had a better sheen to it, and just was shot better, then maybe.
Like, I really hate saying that, too. I don't know how you feel, right? But
But I take, like...
As jubilant as I sound about being on a podcast, I'm sitting there watching it going, like, well, this doesn't sound very good. And I know that we don't sound very good because we're in a car right now. But you know, I think we sound usually better than this. But I'm like, it didn't sound very good. The lighting was off, right, a lot of times.
Yeah.
I mean, it could... And that's what I'm just like, I hated thinking that as I was watching it.
Right.
Because I don't want to sit here and, I mean, as we just, like, told people to keep arting, right? the coffee is for arters. I feel bad sort of being like, well, that looked awful. That sounded awful. But, I mean, sometimes...
Sometimes art's bad.
You just... Right. You're right.
Yeah. If we want to be fair, I mean, again, I don't necessarily know if everyone, if the crowd was packed with friendlies, but... There were a lot of people that seemed to be enjoying the comedy, seemed to be having a good time. I don't necessarily know if they knew everybody in the movie or if they were legitimately enjoying the film, which makes it seem like people would legitimately enjoy this, and I just don't see that being the case.
I don't either.
This is not something that I'm trying to equate it to something that's like. It's already on television, like, or there's something that's similar. This is not even like Home Improvement or Big Bang Theory or like things that people can
or Briscoe County,
right? or Walker Texas Ranger or like
it's like a funny version of Texas Walker, Texas Walker Ranger, yes. Walker Texas Ranger.
Yeah. I hope this is a stepping stone for everyone except for the directors, which I don't. I mean, like, I hope that they find their way to make a better movie next. But yeah, this didn't work for me at all.
So. No, yeah, me either, unfortunately. And I do like a good Western, but
do you?
I think so, most of the time. Yeah. Well,
it's not a genre that I'm going to go to very often.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to, like, seek them out, but I'm always interested to see, like, if someone's doing a Western, like, what are they doing, right? And, like, what kind of new spin are we putting on the Western? Are we deconstructing the Western? Right. Are we doing, like, a neo-Western? Are we doing, like, a Western that represents, I don't know. Here's the thing, though, like, you mentioned that this film should or, you know, could have been, like, a dead serious, like, gore fest, and it just made me think... A Bone Tomahawk, which I fucking hate. I hate that guy's films.
Yeah, you don't like Brawl and Subwalk 99?
I hate that. I just, like, look. I don't know. And I think his films are so packed with nihilism, and I just hate nihilism.
Sure,
It reminds me of, did you ever see The Counselor? Sure you did.
Yeah,
Fassbender.
Oh, yeah.
That film, again, is just like, It's full of just violence and nihilism just for the sake of violence and nihilism.
Right.
Right. It's doing nothing to serve the film. That's how I feel about Bone Tomahawk. Because all of that stuff doesn't do anything to serve the film. And I don't know what Matthew Fox is doing in that movie. Good God, man.
It's like
he used the same accent in the movie where he plays the assassin with Alex Cross, the Alex Cross movie. Right? Where he's in...
Look, can we just say that Matthew Fox had two good roles in his life.
Party of Five and Lost.
Party of Five and Lost.
Yeah.
And at that point, we should have stopped trying to make Matthew Fox happen.
Yeah.
He'd already did it. He done did it. He made two seminal TV shows.
And then when he was in that movie, Vantage Point with Dennis Quaid, right?
I guess so. And then he was in We Are Marshall, where the Marshall football team crashed and they all ate each other in the Andes.
Yeah. Which, what is it? Like, there? I mean, how many stories about sports teams crashing in the Andes and meeting each other do we have? I find it weird that we have multiple, right. Like, real life stories.
We Are Marshall, that. Remember the Titans, Alive, Rocky IV.
Radio.
Radio.
And A League of Their Own.
Right, A League of Their Own.
That's it.
So, yeah, I think that might be the last. Oh, and then Mighty Ducks 2. Right.
Right.
Yeah, that was...
Right. Mighty Ducks 2, : Duck Confit.
Oh, if yeah. only, like, we need a sequel to Radio where he turns into a cannibal. Just, but also the same poster where he's riding his bike with his arms up in the air. Simple jacking it all up. Yeah, so... So maybe Matthew Fox can star in Harsh Treatment, too. I don't know, Alex Cross was one of the worst movies.
That was terrible. I've...
Oh, God. But hey, he was cut like a fucking...
He was. Man.
Brick shithouse. Did we make brick shithouses anymore?
Not in Texas. No.
You gotta go to a different spot.
Yeah. Do you ever wonder, like, what it takes to look like Matthew Fox did in that movie?
And then you're like, oh my god, never mind. Yeah, there's no
problem. Like, you see that and you're like, I want to look like that. And then you're like, no, wait, no. Not if I have to go through all that. Never mind.
No, because it's a brief period in time, right?
Because you can't maintain it.
No, you're either a meth addict and who also works
abs.
Out a lot.
Yeah. I guess you probably would have the energy.
Right. You're just taking weights off and on the bar. you've seen pictures of Vin Diesel on vacation or when he's you can't, and no, you have to get paid to do that kind of stuff. It has to be part of your job. Yes, you can look great, but no one's maintaining starvation level abs.
Not for that long.
No. Unless you're someone, and again, it also helps to have great genetics, but someone like Gosling or something like that, and again, even then I think you're still probably enhancing the abs when they're showing up on screen. I mean, you just can't maintain.
I put makeup on mine.
Do you ever see Meet the Spartans? I know you didn't.
No.
It was one of those Friedberg Seltzer films, and I know there's not their exact names, and those guys set back filmmaking worse than Harsh Treatment did. For decades they set it back, and they definitely set back the parody film. They killed the parody film.
Yeah.
And all those films were shitty, but in Meet the Spartans there was one kind of normal looking guy, and of course they made him to be chubby. I mean, of course, when I say normal, just normal but anyway, he painted his abs on, and I thought that was pretty funny actually.
That was funny.
Alright, so we'll be back tomorrow with
two movies. We've got a couple movies tomorrow. Yeah.
And then on Thursday, we'll have one more movie with Diff and maybe another movie that we'll see, but we'll probably hold off on talking about it because we're just focusing on Diff. And then we'll just do a wrap-up of, our overall thoughts and on the festival. But until tomorrow, folks.
Yeah, talk to you later. Bye.
You have been listening to Why Does the Wilhelm Scream with your hosts, Brock and Jason. If you liked today's episode, do us a favor and rate, review, and subscribe in whatever application you use to consume podcasts these days. You can reach us by visiting whydoesthewilhelmscream.com. If you are in the DFW area, we would love to see you at a Fort Worth Film Club event. You can learn more about those and find a full schedule at fortworthfilmclub.com. And you can learn about my foundation and how we are trying to foster the next generation of film lovers at realhousefoundation.org. That's REEL housefoundation.org. Till next time.